Paul, you've spent a lot more time in an airplane than I have. You've had a lot of conversations with air traffic controllers.
Most of them outstandingly pleasant.
Yeah. Well, even the few that I've had have yeah. You know how anxious it is when you're a student pilot and you're on mic for the first time.
Absolutely.
And I would agree with you that they are pleasant people, and they understand a lot about human dynamics that play into what they do and aren't necessarily on exhibit, but they inform how they go about it.
Well, the system is a team-based effort, and there's no better people than the air traffic controllers to help make the system work.
So let's introduce two of them here.
You betcha.
Tara Zeck and Aaron Katz, who are part of NATCA, part of the National Association or National Air Traffic Controllers Association. And there's a particular subject that you guys are hot on. Let's talk about what that is.
Yeah, so thanks for having us. Start with that. I've been a controller for 21 years, and the last five, I've had the privilege of serving NACA as the National Rep for Human Performance, which Human Factors is part of. And I think the important thing for people to remember is that it doesn't really matter if you're on the pilot side of the microphone, the controller side of the microphone, yep. or supporting the operation and the system altogether. You strip away all those roles, we're all people underneath, right? And we have behaviors that are ingrained in our DNA to think a certain way and behave a certain way when we're not cognizantly aware of it. So active listening, which I know we're going to talk about, all of those things are at work in everything we do. We're always people. We can't get away from that in 24 hours a day, right?
So if you were going to give us a presentation on how to be better at active listening, how would that go?
what would be on the first slide? Like, what is active listening?
Yeah, I'll try to unpack some of the people stuff, and Tara, being the amazing controller she is, can talk about how it looks in the operation when things don't go the right way. But if you think about just a normal conversation with somebody. Kind of like we're having here. Most people, by nature, are not very good listeners. Let's be honest. We don't really listen to what the other person we're talking to says. We be quiet long enough for it to become our turn to talk, right? That's just human nature. It's even worse when we're actively engaged in doing other things when we should be actively engaged in the conversation we're having. Now, of course, people like to throw the term around, especially in air traffic control, multitasking. That's very much a myth. Our brains can't actually cognitively do two things at once, but we can switch very quickly between the tasks that we have to do.
I've tried to convince my girlfriend of that, but that's a losing argument.
It's not working?
No.
Let me know if you come up with a successful argument. Okay. I could use that in my work. But if you're in the cockpit and you're doing your pre-flight stuff, and it comes time, we get to the magic point where we're ready to push that button and talk to ATC. We need to be engaged in that thing only. If you're staring off at the gauges while we're reading back instructions and stuff, you're gonna miss something. It's just that simple.
Well, and what you're saying too is also true of like two pilot flight decks. If I'm calling for a checklist when my partner is listening to something else on the radio, that's a bad time for me to call the checklist because he hasn't heard it.
Absolutely. And yeah. If one of you is in charge of taking in the air traffic instructions and relaying it to the other person and you miss something, maybe you might lean over to your partner and say, did you catch what they said? And this is another human piece, right? The last thing we ever want to do is look as if we don't know something. So you might say, oh, yeah, they said go ahead 3-2 right.
Yeah.
Forgot the part about hold short or runway 4 in the middle there.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a problem that's it's not a sin, and it's not criminal. It's human, but it's real, and it happens all the time. Where does active listening help?
Well, one thing I want to say is, we talk about safe, orderly, and expeditious, and active listening. I think what we all need to remember is it's okay to slow down. Yes, we want to be expeditious, but we want to slow it down so that nothing is missed, so that we are catching those pieces from the air traffic controller. Being in the safety realm of ATC, I read the reports about pilots reading back everything that a controller said because it's robot, it's auto, right? They read it back automatically and then depart the wrong way because they just didn't slow down and pay attention and just take it in and go, okay, this is the way I'm supposed to turn.
In my Part 121 world, when I was involved in training, we had a program called ASAP, Aviation Safety Action Reporting. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar. 80% of our reports contain two words, distracted or rushed. Same thing.
Slow down. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with slowing down. trust but verify. If you're not sure, ask.
And is it true? We sometimes tell our pilots that one of the best things you can tell ATC is to stand by. If you're not quite ready to do whatever that instruction was, you can just say stand by because I need a moment to think.
Absolutely, 100%.
So as controllers, how do you deal with that? When you know that you've got a certain number of seconds in which to do five things and one of them you can't do?
You know, for me, I would say that when you say that, it really helps ground me back and almost pull me into your airplane and reminds me that you have a lot going on too, not just me. And really, you know, I think for a long time there was this adversarial kind of imagined relationship between pilots and controllers when really we're symbiotic.
It's a team.
And we're here for each other. Yeah. We're only each here because of one another and for each other. And so I think when you tell me stand by, it really helps cue me into, oh yeah, I'm not the only one here in this relationship. He's got some stuff to do too.
Yeah.
You talked about readback not necessarily being a solution. If the person reading back to, if the pilot reading back to you isn't also thinking about what he's saying as he or she does the readback, is there too much readback that you can get?
I don't think so, because I think if we're all actively listening, then that's just more information for on both sides for us to take in and make sure that we're all on the same page, right?
Yeah.
If I can clean that up just real quick, are you saying like I'm reading back too much information at once, so from the start to the finish of the readback I might have forgot what happened to me?
Well,
we call that chunking.
What I've noticed is that some pilots will selectively read back. They will omit certain pieces of what the directions are, maybe in the interest of time, maybe because it was believed to be assumed. I've always been curious about that, listening to people selectively read back.
This goes to the class that we gave this morning about reading back proper phraseology, because for us, there are certain things that have to be said. So the way we read it to you is the way it needs to be read back.
Like,
otherwise,
like
we
clearances.
Have to. Yes. Otherwise, yeah. Or the whole short instructions. Otherwise, we have to read it back again to you until we get the proper read back. So cutting things out isn't necessary. Not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. We're talking with Tara Zeck and with Aaron Katz, both air traffic controllers, about the subject of active listening.
Tara, I always ask this question when I have the benefit of your audience here. What's your single most pet peeve?
Oh, my single most pet peeve.
I'm talking about pilots.
Listening.
That may be it.
Listening and not asking.
Yeah.
Verify. If you don't know something, then you need to verify, because it's not safe for you to do something or go the wrong way when it could have just been prevented with a question.
Yep. Yeah, I think your colleagues would almost unanimously say that, because I hear that a lot, is listen better, and if you have a question, ask.
What do they teach you in air traffic controller school about how to recover and remediate from a situation like that?
They teach you to move on. You can't. You have your A, B, C, D plan.
Mm-hmm.
And if A doesn't work, then you go on to B. And if it doesn't work, then you just keep going and you keep moving, because y'all don't stop flying.
We read a lot about shortages of air traffic controllers. Is that true? You guys are hiring. There's a way to become an air traffic controller. I hear that there's so many hundreds of, or almost thousands of controllers short.
Yeah, listen, I mean, it takes a lot of people to keep the NAS moving as demand goes up. And, of course, I don't know if you guys remember, a few years ago the world shut down and things stopped, and now we're back and we're full speed. And it takes a lot of people to make sure. This job is, your tools are your brain. And your brain, whether we like it or not, needs recharging and refueling. And you can only do this so long before your brain starts to say, I don't think I can handle quite all of this after 2 hours or so. And so we need the right amount of people to come.
Do you have recurrent training like pilots do? I mean, do you have to go and be retrained, recertified?
Yes, sir.
How often
monthly,
is that?
Monthly.
Really?
Every month is a different refresher training.
Wow.
You guys are performing at such a high level, though.
Yeah.
That it, I can understand. I mean, not to make it sound like a challenge you don't want to take on, but it is challenging. When does school start? When's the next class going to start?
Well, recurrent training is on a, like Tara said, a monthly schedule.
But for new controllers.
Oh, for new controllers. I just met somebody actually that got selected on that, and he told me that his date to take the test was August 31st. So
wow.
Keep your eyes out on the FAA website. There's a little section there that'll say, how do I become an air traffic controller? And they They do off-the-street hiring, where you can apply and see if you meet the qualifications, things of that nature. And then there's also our College Training Initiative plan, or CTI plan. You can get through that way. We also have previous experience bids. So you will see active hiring from the FAA over the next several years, and we need it.
Tara, are you in a TRACON, or?
I work at David Wayne Hook's Air Traffic Control Tower.
Oh, down in Houston.
Yes, sir.
All right, down in Houston. All right, I got it.
Is either of you working Oshkosh this week?
Well, we work the NACA booth, mm-hmm. So we're doing pilot outreach and education.
No,
but not in the tower
yet.
No pink shirt for me.
The controllers are wearing all the pink shirts. They're keeping all these folks safe out here and doing a great job of it.
Yeah.
Do you have to bid that to do this? How do those controllers get selected?
There's an agreement in place between NACA and the FAA, and it starts in this geographical area of the country. So we select people from there first, and then if they can't fill you talked about staffing, they need a certain amount of people to do this.
Yeah.
Right? This is a unique thing. they don't have enough people just from the geographic area there, then they'll go to the next agreed upon geographical area to pull more controllers. It's hard to pull controllers away from the operation right now, as you touched on, because the staffing is not where we need it to be.
We really thank you for all you do to keep us safe. You guys are outstanding.
Thanks for having us.
Aaron Katz and Tara Zeck with the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
You're listening to EAA Radio.